Access number 17548, Reel 3.
Mr. Oliver, Reel 3, you were telling about the roadblocks.
Oh yes, we used to have these roadblocks and we'd pick up people and also took them off trains as well. Normally there were people who'd been in Germany under forced labour, and we had one chap there. He was a Russian, and what he'd done, he'd raided this farm, and when we got him, he had a suitcase full of small sucking pigs that they'd killed, and he had the suitcase full of them. And we found out afterwards that he'd raped the grandmother and the mother and the daughter at the farm, him and his chaps who were with him and that, and he was taken into custody. But
so he was a Russian displaced person?
Person, yes.
Or a Russian soldier?
Well, Russian soldier, he was actually, yes.
Was there much of that type of thing?
Well, there was a lot of it going on, yes. Yes, a lot of it. Yeah.
What was he like, this man?
Well, he was... I couldn't get in touch with him because he only spoke Russian, you know, but they carried him off, and he was sort of debriefed by the German and the British police. Because we came under what they called a Kreisober inspector or something. He was in charge of the local council and that, and he helped with a lot of these people when we did capture them, because they had records of where they came from and where they'd been used in employment. Most of them had been working on farms and things like that.
Did you and the other British soldiers have any sympathy with the Germans?
We had a certain amount of sympathy. We had a lot of Germans working for us in the office, the girls and that were talking. But one thing that I think we did disagree with a lot, at the time we had this non-fertilization ban on, if you remember that at all, you probably read about it. But it was a case of, if a British soldier enters a cafe and there's no seats, well, somebody got up and gave him a seat kind of thing, and it was a kind of a degrading thing for the German people, and I thoroughly disagreed with it, although they seemed to take it all in the stead. We weren't allowed to fraternize with the general public for quite a while, and then that was relaxed.
Did you obey the non-fraternization order?
Not always, no. No, I used to talk to quite a few people in the towns. Well, you had no option when you went into a shop for a film or something like that, you know, or for a meal. You had no option but to speak to the people, you know. I don't know who instigated it. I think it was to sort of rub the salt into the wound that they were a beaten people, that kind of thing, you know. But I didn't altogether agree with it. I don't think many soldiers did, actually. I mean, it isn't the normal thing for, I think, an Englishman to sort of degrade people, and I think that's what was happening.
Any other memories from the occupation of Germany?
Oh yes, I went to the opera in Hanover. Oh, we had quite a nice time, really. In Germany, we were able to do a little bit of sightseeing and all that. There were no, when you were off duty, you were off duty sort of idea, providing you obeyed the rules.
Did you ever trade anything with the Germans?
Yes, quite often. We traded cigarettes for cameras and all kinds of things, you know. All of which, all the cigarettes I traded, and I had a lovely Leica camera. It was taken off me by the customs when I arrived back in England, so I didn't gain much out of it. I had a beautiful camera. Oh, there was a lot of it went on. It had to. I mean, the cigarettes were—they were a currency, as was chocolate. That was another currency. And as a matter of fact, some of the higher up officers and that were trading stuff and flying cars home. And the RAF were taking the gliders back and things like that. That was happening a lot. They were caught, most of them. But we did do a lot of bartering for cigarettes and foodstuffs generally. But the Bahnhof in Ernst August Place in Hanover.
This is the railway station.
That was the railway station there. That was a general market. Mind you, the military police were very much in evidence there, but that was quite a marketplace for foodstuffs, cigarettes, and things like that, because we were loaded down with the stuff.
So were you not supposed to trade with the Germans?
Not supposed to, no, but it went on.
Why not? What was the objection to it?
I don't know what the objection was, but we were told, we were more or less told that... they were a race of people, so, well, beyond contempt, really, I suppose, which wasn't true, because the average German civilian and the average German soldier, in my opinion, was the same as we were. We were under orders to do these certain things, and that was it. I mean, the SS, Gestapo, and the Nazi Party themselves were a different kettle of fish altogether to the ordinary German civilian. This chap, Rolf Trodler, that I correspond with now, he was, matter of fact, he's had seven heart transplants. He was an engineer with the German telecom.
Is his name Trodler?
Trodler.
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 T-R-O-D.
T-R-O-D.
Sorry, don't worry about that.
No, there's a...
Don't worry about the documents. Yeah. So what could happen to you...
I can give you his address if you want.
No, that's all right. Yeah. What could happen to you... if you were caught trading with the Germans?
Well, the usual military things come in. You'd probably get 56 days detention or something like that, you know. You weren't exactly court-martialed, but you'd come before a military court. Mm-hmm. It was against military law at the time, I know, but it was very widespread, and I don't think used to get the... odd red cap who'd grab hold of somebody and take them in and that kind of business and confiscate whatever they'd got, but that's about as far as it went, as far as I could see.
Which years were you in the occupation of Germany?
Well, that was at the just at the end of the war, 1945.
Just for a few months?
Just a few months, yes.
Now, earlier, off the record, you were telling me about Bobby Tracy, yeah, in the war, mm-hmm, and any bombs that fell. Can you repeat what you were telling me about the bombing in Bobby Tracy?
Well, I rejoined my unit in Bobby Tracy, and all the different chaps came, and we met then, reformed our unit, and when we left Bobby Tracy, we didn't go. I said earlier that we went to Effingham before we went. I went to Effingham with 13 troop carrying. Now, we went up into Surrey.
But could you tell me about the bombs that fell on Bobby Tracy?
Oh, yes. We were at the Devon House in Bobby Tracy, which was the top end of Bobby Tracy. And the night after we left to go up into Surrey, a landmine dropped at the top end of Bobby Tracy, almost outside the building, but a bit lower than the building on a sloping field there. And had it dropped lower in Bobby Tracy, it would have been horrendous, but there were no casualties. And then, of course, we were two or three occasions the jetty planes come over, and on one occasion they strafed Brimley Park, which is a part of Bobby Tracy. And an elderly lady in one of the houses was hit Well, either by a cannon shot or a fighter plane or a bullet. It went through the bottom part of the window, and she was standing with her arm leaning on the mantelpiece, and the bullet entered her arm, and she was bedridden for quite a while with shock and different things. But when I came back out of the army, I got in touch with the British Legion, and because I remember this happening, and the local doctor, and tried to get her a war pension, but it didn't work out. But she since died, a lady called Ayres in Brimley Park.
What was this Devon House?
Devon House originally was a Christian establishment for fallen women. It had dormitories, Faith, Hope and Charity at the top of the house. I think I was in Hope, the dormitory I was in. But, of course, when the army commandeered it, they moved all these girls out, and we took over as our headquarters for the motor ambulance convoy. And we did various duties while we were there. We went down to Plymouth, and we stood a guard on the aerodrome at Plymouth, a Fleet Island aerodrome down there, which is now Plymouth Airport. And we used to stand guard there, and then we done a lot of ferrying troops and that from, we got rid of our ambulances, we had ordinary trucks at the time. We were ferrying Royal Marines from Plymouth to Ivory Bridge Station because they were going overseas and that. And that again, I think, was a little bit of an exercise to fool any fifth column that was about, because we seemed to be ferrying the same troops all the time from Plymouth to Ivory Bridge. It seemed to be, we recognised faces, you know, we got this chat, I've seen you before, you know. And it appears what they were doing, they were going and boarding a ship and then coming back to Plymouth by ship and starting all over again, sort of idea. I think it was a kind of, to put the sort of fifth column off the centre.